I would like to share in these brief minutes what was shared with us by two Christians, Christians who are seen as saints by some and as subversives by others. One, a well-known Catholic leader, a citizen of Brazil. Second, a little-known Protestant pastor, an American in Uruguay. Archbishop Helder Camara had once been offered the mayorship of Rio, the glittering city on the ocean that attracts tourists to its famous Copacabana beach, curving past its elegant skyscrapers and luxury hotels. But the Archbishop declined the mayorship of Rio. Instead of presiding over a tourist city that caters to the rich, the only part of Latin America that perhaps most American tourists see, Dom Helder, as he is known to his friends, chose to work to eliminate the injustices that strangle the poor. And so he was appointed Archbishop of Recife, the capital of that terribly impoverished northeast sector of the huge country. His leadership has been instrumental in altering the sensitivity of much of the Roman Catholic Church, which serves a population 95% Catholic. In altering sensitivity to the oppression of the peasant masses in Latin America, a continent where the Catholic Church has had a long tradition of offering only heaven in the next life to the suffering people of the barrios and the rural land. Dom Helder's invitation to us brought us to the Episcopal Palace, the official residence of the Archbishop, which he has converted to offices and a center where the poor may come to get assistance from his staff, the doctors, the social workers, lawyers, and pastors. Dom Helder has moved out of the palace and lives in a small back room of a modest parish church, the outside walls of which are pockmarked from the bullets of would-be assassins. Why is Dom Helder's life threatened? Why have two of his assistant priests been killed and six others imprisoned? Why has the government's censored press forbidden even the printing of his name by the newspapers? It seems clear that it is not because he provides personal assistance to the victims of poverty, the sick, the homeless, and unemployed, but beyond that ministry, he is earnestly working to change the fundamental, the underlying injustices that enslave and destroy millions of lives. And that, it seems, is the reason why his life is threatened and that of his followers. It is a beautiful thing to see the courageous efforts of the Church, both Catholic and Protestant efforts in Latin America, working at agricultural development, working to organize people into credit unions and cooperatives that will allow them to have the kind of economic vehicles that will bring them into the economy. And yet, it is a dangerous business to become involved in organizing the poor for any purpose. Countless numbers of people who have become involved in that have suddenly disappeared, never to be heard from again. And so Dom Helder challenges the corrupt sugarcane plantation owners regarding the wages they pay, operating their huge haciendas in the old feudal manner of despotic kingdoms. He has used the $300,000 he won in peace prize money awarded in Oslo, Norway, and Frankfurt to purchase land for redistribution to the landless cane field workers. And he forthrightly protests the imprisonment of innocent dissenters, calling on the government to halt repression and torture as a method of reacting to revolution. Perhaps the most revealing thing that was shared by Dom Helder was when he told of his visit to the general, by which we would assume he meant a former president of the country, and he asked the general, "Why am I charged with being a subversive?" And the significant reply of the general was, "If the government has not established structures by which to alter the status of the poor, yet you proceed to develop such structures, then you are subverting our system. Then you are a subversive." Jesus was not crucified for calling his followers to live peacefully with the enemy, for calling to love their enemies, but he was crucified for introducing a new order, a new government, a new regime. Each of his parables begins, "The kingdom of God is like unto." That is to say, the new regime is like this. And that is what threatened the government of Rome. And it is when we introduce those new structures on behalf of the poor that we threaten governments today. Is it then any wonder that during Holy Week, when Jesus was brought before the authorities, the charge that was brought against him was that he was a subversive? The second person whose experience remains on our mind is, or persons, is Daniel and Eunice Miller, who are assigned to Uruguay under the Mennonite Church's mission program. They've been there for 20 years, working in a miserable slum area in the outskirts of Montevideo. They were there long before the revolutionary ferment erupted with the Tupamaro movement in 1968, and before Uruguay's democratic government collapsed and a military dictatorial government took over. Working as they do with young people as well as adults, many of the young people having been involved in illegal actions bringing them into conflict with the police, some of them undoubtedly sympathetic if not identified with the Tupamaro movement, has of course been a difficult experience for the Millers, and yet they understand the deep concerns of these young people who protest the fact that 600 families own 90% of the land of Uruguay, with acreage as high as 300,000 acres and incomes of $1 to $3 million a year. Many of the young people that Millers work with had been in trouble, as I say, with the police, as the sons and daughters of families struggling to make it in the barrio. Nevertheless, the Millers worked with them, opening up new horizons through Bible study and a look at another kind of radical life in the person of Jesus. Jesus also worked with the zealots, the militants of his day, having several in his disciple band, even though his method of seeking to alleviate injustices was different from their own. But this association with revolutionaries is not easily understood, especially by reactionary governments. An amazing effort was made by the wife of Uruguay's president and other prestigious women to eclipse the community work of Daniel and Eunice when one day they drove up in their Mercedes-Benz in the slum barrio with their furs and all, requesting that the Millers give them the keys to the community center. Now they would introduce a social service program. But not willing to betray the community's trust, Millers refused. And then one day the police came for their 18-year-old daughter. Fortunately, she was not home, but it was necessary for them to get her out of the country. Apparently, the only charge that they could understand was that she had been a participant in a study group in the university that looked at various political forms of government, including Marxism. And then sometime after, Daniel was picked up, hooded, and taken away into detainment by the police, and for 3 days and three nights was subjected to the torture routine used by the military in a growing number of third world countries in an attempt to break his spirit and supposedly to cause him to want to leave the country. 300,000 people have left Uruguay for similar reasons. For Daniel, the experience came during Holy Week. He and his congregation had spent the first 3 days of Holy Week sharing the meaning of Christ's arrest and trial. And from those Bible study sessions with his members, he drew strength. Forced as he was to stand with his arms outstretched and his legs for 12 unending hours, he silently sang hymns to the tempo of the involuntary spasms that overtake outstretched arms over a period of hours. The gun butts wielded by soldiers whacked his arms back into position when all strength was gone. Electric shock was applied to various parts of his body, and he recited silently the prayers his congregation had prayed several days before, remembering Christ's suffering. A very modest man of slight build, Daniel reflected on the many times his young people had told him that he just couldn't understand what they were going through when they were hauled in by the authorities, and he had always had to agree with them that he couldn't really understand their plight. But now he realized that he could. The line of questioning that followed, that interspersed the torture routine, clearly had to have been based on files of detailed information supplied, he thought, either by the CIA or the FBI, perhaps files held by the U.S. Embassy in Uruguay, for the questions covered very specific matters on his whereabouts during many years of his past life. And the military person in charge of the torture routine boasted that he had gotten his training from the U.S. military at West Point, by which it is thought he meant the military training school in Panama, dubbed West Point. When finally the grueling experience was ended, he was taken to the showers and the hood over his head removed for the first time, and to his amazement, a tall, muscular, blonde man turned on the showers for him, and Daniel was convinced that he had to be an American, one who was there through the whole routine. One would like to think that perhaps his conscience was troubled, that here a fellow citizen of his country had been subjected to this. Maybe the simple act of turning on the showers was a gesture of goodwill. But whatever the meaning, the implications are serious. When he then walked back into the community center that also serves as a meeting place for his congregation, he walked into the midst of a drama being performed by the youth of that congregation on the flogging of Jesus. It was Maundy Thursday, the evening before Good Friday. Present with the Millers on that memorable day we spent with them several weeks ago was a chaplain to the political prisoners of Uruguay, the only man allowed to visit these tortured people. And he told us that a minimum of 7,000 people are presently serving indefinite sentences without trial. He told us to share their story, their experience with fellow Christians here, but not to publish names. Did he expect to go to prison himself, we asked. CCC, he responded. And upon departing, he said, "If we win the cross, we will count it a privilege." In that charged atmosphere where there is fear of revealing names and the relating of experiences is done in hushed tones, I thought often of the early Christian church. Perhaps the period of 100 AD, when the book of Revelation, with its coded language to protect the Christian community, was written, best conveys this difficult period in the history of the Church of Latin America, a time when the principalities and the powers have been unleashed on those whose commitment it is to bring hope and justice to the oppressed, and when those endeavors are seen as subversion. In the 13th chapter of Revelation, the words are as follows. The beast, was allowed to wage war on God's people, meaning the government of Rome. Hear you who have ears to hear. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Finally, as Marian has already suggested, it seems that so much of our work as a Christian people is right here in this city. For it's right in Georgetown where the International Police Academy trains hundreds of third world policemen every year. It's right in this town where the Congress has to decide whether to vote more military aid to oppressive governments or less. It's right here where a foreign trade bill will be voted on shortly, which can be administered by the executive branch in such a way that third world countries will either have a better chance to raise their standard of living for all people or a lesser chance. When we recognize that the present population of 275 million people in Latin America will spiral to 700 million in the next 30 years, we can see all of the seeds for a tremendous upheaval and tremendously increased suffering, unless we can find a way as Christians to sensitize the conscience of decision makers in this affluent nation, preoccupied as it is with inflation, to sensitize the conscience of decision makers that will allow us to be more just, to be more compassionate to these brothers and sisters in the Southern Hemisphere.